This is Not Often Heard with Gary Taylor and Mark Stockley.
Hello and welcome to Not Often Heard, the podcast. My name is Gary.
My name is Mark.
And this is where we have an occasional series where we talk about things we don't really get enough time to do.
No, because we witter on for far too much, and this pod gives us the opportunity to do that.
Exactly. We only have an hour on our regular show, so it is a little bit difficult. So we said way back in January, after Doctor Who episodes 1 and 2, Spyfall had broadcast, that we would come back and we would talk about the rest of the season.
Indeed.
And we have been talking about the episodes individually.
We have on the regular show.
On the regular show. So if you have been listening, then you may have already heard some of our opinions. For those of you who don't listen, first of all, why not? But second, we hope that you will enjoy listening to our wrap-up of the season, where we can take a nice look back at what's happened over the last sort of 10 weeks or so, and take a step back, I suppose, and go, yeah. What did we think of that as an
appraise, an appraisal.
An appraisal, I like that.
Yes.
So, we are looking at episode 10 first, shall we? The Timeless Children.
Mm-hmm.
So, we left it on a not fantastic cliffhanger, to be honest, for episode 9.
No, it was, I think, fairly obvious that the Master was going to return at some point in the season.
I still think he should be called the Master.
No, he's the Master.
The Master, because I'm Northern now, like you.
Master.
So him jumping out of this vortex / wormhole type thingy and going, surprise!
And everybody was like, no, that's not a surprise. Yeah,
and, and everything you know is about to change. I'm like, yeah, we know that. That's what you told us in episode 2.
Yeah. It's kind of like, repeating yourself there.
Come on. So we then get into what I feel is probably 45 minutes of the most boring Doctor Who in terms of what the Doctor actually gets to do.
She does spend most of that first 40 minutes basically as a member of the audience like us and just listens to the Master talking.
So she gets dragged through this wormhole saying, I'll be back. And he's like, no, you ain't coming back. To the ruins of Gallifrey and shoved in a beam of light and flung into the Matrix.
Basically.
Where he then proceeds to reveal. And we had some pretty big reveals.
We did.
So we found out, if I'm getting this right, if I've understood this right, the Doctor is not Gallifreyan.
No. But what we can say, I think, is that she is still a Time Lord.
The original, you might say. So, I think one, I don't know, it feels like we're on a bit of dodgy ground here. So, if I understand this right, the original inhabitants of Gallifrey, the Shabogans.
Yes.
And this particular lady, Tektaun, journeys out into space, drops on a planet, finds a random child standing by a portal going, I'm kind of lost.
It's like, what am I doing here?
Takes her back home to Gallifrey, and after an accident happens, this child regenerates and has this magical ability to heal themselves by completely changing their appearance.
Yes.
And then we go through this kind of little bit of a montage of what it appears to be this child being killed repeatedly by Tektaun.
Yeah, experimented on, killing them, regenerating over and over and over again until she can kind of like splice that genetic ability. She focuses in on that genetic ability and then implants it into herself.
That's it. He's able to regenerate, and then that gift is given to lots of other people on Gallifrey. But yeah, with a limit, there were 12 still.
Yes.
So, I think I struggle. The bit I struggle with is just the fact that the Doctor sees all this being played out from the Matrix and is not actively involved in any of it. She's an observer.
It's a whole lump of exposition, really, isn't it? That's what it is. It's the Master basically telling us at home and the Doctor and just, you know, this is what happened. This is a story I'm going to tell you and this is what happened and guess what? It's you!
For me, it doesn't make a sense, narratively speaking, for me personally, as if it was the Master that was the one who was the Timeless Child.
You were saying that it would explain his rage and anger, didn't you?
It fits a little better as to why he was so angry and why he went and took it all out on Gallifrey and destroyed it, because they realised what they had done to him.
Mm.
It makes more sense for me. I mean, other people are fine.
I think the idea that, I mean, it was said in the episode, wasn't it, the idea why he had to burn Gallifrey was because it felt so vile to him that he had a piece of the Doctor inside him.
He took it so personally.
He really did, didn't he?
Really? I'm like, mate, chill out. I mean, you should be grateful. You've lived a very long life and regenerated lots of different times, mm-hmm. thanks to a gift from the Doctor. So we had that massive revelation. There's been lots of people trying to kind of say, is this Chris Chibnall trying to tie up a few loose ends from the classic series when we saw in the Brain of Morbius?
Yeah.
Supposedly previous regenerations of the Doctor has been speculated
because
lots of different faces appeared.
Philip Hinchcliffe said that he absolutely meant for those other faces to be earlier incarnations of the Doctor.
Mm. So now I guess that's possible.
Yeah.
We also, the whole thing about Ireland in the previous episode, Ascension of the Cybermen, I was really intrigued by that, thinking how on earth was this tying together with this policeman who was found as a baby, fell off a cliff, and healed themselves magically, did not die. And then at the end was met by his father and another policeman who hadn't aged and was having their mind wiped.
Yes, yeah.
And I just felt that I didn't get the payoff I hoped for that.
No, it was implied that this... Well, his name was Brandon, wasn't he?
Yeah.
This Irish man who became a policeman. And it was implied, I think, that Brandon was the Doctor.
Yes.
And that at the end of his career as an Irish policeman, he was going to be taken back to Gallifrey, and the headphones, headsets that he was putting was wiping his mind to kind of like reset him. Because one of the other things that was kind of like implied in that episode last week was that the Doctor was being used by something called the Division.
Yes, which sounds a bit like the old CIA, Celestial Intervention Agency, which is from the classic series, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I believe if I'm right, the whole thing about Ireland was that it was an overlay put on by the Time Lords to conceal the true nature. So the whole falling off the cliff and all that lot mirrored what actually happened to the timeless child falling off the cliff in that fight. It was just they didn't want the Doctor to know the truth about those memories.
Right.
So they overlaid this Irish scenario. It's almost like a holodeck.
Yeah.
Thing. They did put a holographic matrix over the top of the real memory to turn it into something that you think is completely innocent. You don't realize. It's about the fact this has never been mentioned before. And she's going, oh, yeah, I keep thinking about Ireland. And like, when have you ever mentioned that?
Well, Gallifrey sounds Irish. Oh. That's been mentioned loads in the past, hasn't it?
Yeah. He's messing with us.
I will be perfectly honest. The whole kind of like retconning, if you can call it that, of kind of like the past of the Doctor did not bother me in the slightest. Chibnall was saying that you'll need a stiff drink after this episode, and oh, you'll need to watch it live, and oh, you'll feel wrung out by the end of it. And afterwards, I was like, okay. Yeah. I was just like, oh, okay. Yeah. But that's not to say that I didn't enjoy it, because I did enjoy it. I found it entertaining. I can see its faults, though.
Yeah. At the end of it, I felt, again, I'm going back to episode 2 when we did the pod.
Yeah.
Dissatisfied.
Yes.
Unsatisfied, I think was the word I used.
Yeah. It? Unsatisfying.
I felt the same about this. It was like, I mean, I'm a bit like you. I don't care about the whole retconning stuff.
No.
Doctor Who has always had a flexible history.
Canon is fluid.
Yeah. Exactly.
Absolutely.
No problem with that. It was just the way that they chose to start to tell that part of the story with the Doctor being an observer for 45 flipping minutes. it annoyed me. So balanced against that, we then had the B plot, as it were, shall we say, of the Cybermen,
the Cybermen
and the Cyber Carrier, whatever.
And the, don't forget the Cyber Lords.
We'll get to those in a moment. So we had a run around on a ship to intercut with the Gallifrey stuff. Yes, it was okay. I thought it was a bit of a cop-out that we did not see them getting into the suits. So the companions steal some cyber suits. Presumably they have to gut them first.
Well, I think that's what the two or three humans that were left helped them to do. Wouldn't the other, you know, the side characters did all that so that the companions didn't have to. We'll do that so you don't have to.
So, actually, there was two left by that point. Do you remember?
Ravio and I don't know the other bloke's name. Other I can't remember. Exactly. Other bloke.
Exactly.
Other bloke.
That is. We don't know these characters. We don't know them because we haven't had the depth and the time to them. We started off the episode with three, and one got dispatched, I think, within the first 5 minutes. She was total cannon fodder.
Yeah, she stayed behind, didn't she, as the cyber army was marching into this bridge or something.
You go!
I'll cover you!
Oh, yeah, you just knew what was going to happen.
Yeah.
I know I sound really down, but that kind of bit was exciting. I liked it. I love the redesigned Cybermen.
Yeah.
They're kind of reminiscent of the classic series.
Definitely.
Again.
Yeah.
Great design job. Love that. They are the lousiest shots ever. I mean, there's no change there, I suppose.
No, there isn't. But you think these, you know, the most highly advanced cyborgs in the galaxy, they should be able to aim.
But I suppose nothing changes, really. We've had that for years.
Oh,
same with the Daleks as well.
Yep. The Daleks can only aim and shoot people when the plot needs them to.
I would agree with that assessment, yes. So we had that. We had a nice little run around on the ship. They drop down to the planet.
Yeah.
Then decide to hop through. There was an odd little jump, I suppose, when they kind of hopped through the wormhole and arrived on Gallifrey and were like, where's the Doctor? God, it's this massive citadel in ruins. She could be anywhere. And I think, was it 30 seconds later, they kind of stroll in to the Panopticon.
Oh, there you are.
Hey, fancy seeing you here.
A whole city to explore when we find you within, 2 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, a bit of creative license.
Plot demands it, so it happens. Yes. Those sorts of things I can overlook because it happens in lots of things. So
yes, it's true. It's just funny when it happens, I think. And then we get to the climax. So the Master's big plan this time is to take the gift of regeneration of the Gallifreyans and splice it together with the Cybermen and their, I don't want to say indestructibility because they are absolutely capable of being destroyed.
Yes.
But they're shells, shall we say. They're reinforced shells and they're battle ready. And creating the Cyber Lords.
Yeah. So, well, he called them the Cyber Masters, didn't he?
Which
I don't like. I prefer it's the Cyber Lords is better.
I mean, I guess that's him just being a bit egotistic, isn't it? Wanting something named after himself. But I prefer Cyber Lords, you're right.
Yeah.
So he takes the Cyberium into him, the Master does, and then decides he's going to use all the Gallifreyans he's kept on ice at the back.
But lucky he did that, isn't he?
Incredibly convenient. And again, I guess he must have found a way to stop them regenerating. I guess you go bang, 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 bang. As soon as they start to regenerate, bang again, and just keep going until they stop. And this all happens off screen.
Yeah.
Which I know my bugbear is still, show not tell. But I can understand we could have cut down some of the Jodie in the Matrix plots. Maybe had a bit of that. And then the Cyber Lords stride on as he's like, I present my new army, Doctor, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I burst out laughing, I don't know about you. Because they were wearing capes.
And they had the Time Lord helmet things, shoulder collar things. I don't know what you call them.
Yeah, I know what you mean. The formal. And even in the classic series, it was established as that is formal wear for special occasions.
Yeah,
it's not cash. I just wondered what happened when they sat around the writer's table and with the designer and they went, can we have that? And nobody actually said, you sure? And I just love the thought of like the Cybermen going, right, lads, we may be Cybermen now, but we are still Gallifreyan at heart, and we are going out there looking hot. So get on your headpieces, get on your capes, and let's sashay.
But if you, I don't know if you noticed, the actual head dresses were actually attached to the head units, weren't they? Yeah, there wasn't like it wasn't like a separate collar like the time was had. It was actually part of the,
instead of handles.
Yeah,
they had the collar.
Yeah,
and I was like, what? How on earth? Has somebody been knocking them up back there? And did they reuse the capes, or did they make new capes? Why capes? Why do Cybermen need capes? I don't get it.
That is another example, isn't it, of that kind of like artistic license. You know that if such a thing as Cybermen did exist, they totally would never, ever have capes. They never, ever would have those headpieces.
Yeah.
It was done for the effect.
Yes. I mean, I can kind of understand the thinking with the headpieces, because you want to signal Gallifrey and Cybermen.
Yeah.
Cyberlords.
Yeah.
That is fine. But they need battle armor. They don't need bits of material.
No capes.
So we then have our climax. The companions, again, didn't do a hell of a lot apart from escaping from the Cybermen, which gave us a bit of a run around for half an hour or so. Turn up, and they get told by the Doctor, you need to leave.
Yeah, you need to go.
Shoved into a waiting TARDIS. Luckily, they've still got a few scattered around. Shoved into a TARDIS. Lovely console room again.
Beautiful. Oh, I just wish Jodie's had that console room. I just do.
And you just knew that somebody was going to try and go back with Jodie, the Doctor, to say, no, don't use that manual bomb.
No. Because the timing mechanisms broke.
It was incredibly convenient. Is it Ashad?
Was the lone Cyberman. Yeah.
Dispatched cruelly halfway through the episode with just a zap.
With a tissue compression eliminator.
You've got that flesh-eating virus or whatever inside you.
Yeah.
That's rather handy. Zap. I'll have that, thanks. It was... It falls down to Yaz to do the whole, no, Doctor, you can't do this.
Yeah.
And I think Ryan has to stop and say, no, Yaz, you can't do that. You've got to let her go.
Yeah.
Whilst he's standing across the room, not even trying to restrain her.
No. I must admit, I did like the little line that Jodie gave to them, and when she went, live great lives.
Yes.
Nice little talk. Hark back, I thought, to Christopher Eccleston.
Yeah.
When he sent Rose back. Yes. And they were fighting the Daleks. Just nice little line.
Nice little
but
touch.
Yes, you could see something coming a mile off that somebody was going to stop her.
Yes. And of course it turned out to be the old bloke who was the gatekeeper. I can't remember his name.
Kosharmus. I remember that.
Ah, yes, Kosharmus. Fronts up handily to go, it's all right, you don't need to kill yourself, I'll do it.
Yeah.
I'm old, don't worry about me.
Yeah, the universe needs you, Doctor.
You need to go. And there's... that whole drawn out sequence where he's like, I'm going to press it. I am so going to press it. I am definitely going to press it. Doctor sprints out. The Master off screen goes, you lot, in here. So obviously there was a TARDIS on the other side of the room that the Cyberlords and the Master have galloped into. Press the button. Jodie's managed to escape in a TARDIS. The fam arrive back in a TARDIS shaped like a house.
I did think that did make me giggle as a TARDIS material. Nobody noticed and it just appear there on it. And what I did think, an empty patch of green land in a city in the UK. Yeah. Not been built on? No.
So, the fam are stranded on Earth, back home again.
Yeah.
With two people from the future who must be going, I really wish one of them had actually, is it Ravio?
The woman was Ravio. Yeah.
I really wish she'd come and gone, ancient Earth. Oh my God, it's so primitive. So they're stranded on Earth and they think the Doctor is dead.
Yeah.
Having destroyed Gallifrey with the virus. And plot twist, the Doctor is immediately kidnapped in the TARDIS. Supposedly, you know. The
impregnable TARDIS.
Why did you do? And... total Doctor, 10th Doctor, David Tennant, ending of, what?
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 She gets imprisoned, which I thought was lovely. I really enjoyed that bit.
Yeah.
That was good.
You liked it when it ended.
That little nod. There were some positive things. I thought the scene between Yaz and Graham,
yeah,
where he basically said, I think you're the most wonderful person. You thought, you know, the doctor was the most amazing person. Well, that's I think it's about you.
Yeah.
I thought it was a lovely moment.
Yeah.
And I felt sure one of them was about to die.
I did too. I was sure one of them was about to cark it.
So I'm kind of glad that that didn't happen. So it was exciting. It wasn't as exciting as perhaps as the hype
of what
we've been led to believe, which is a shame. So if we look back at the series as a whole.
Yes.
Do you feel it was a better series compared to last year, season 11?
Yes, quite simply. And you know, I enjoyed several of the episodes in Series 11. I do think that modern Doctor Who needs a bit of a story arc going through the season. I think it needs that. I think Season 11 not having that did feel like there was something missing. Although I must admit, I liked what they tried to do with season 11. It didn't always hit the mark.
Yeah.
I thought in many ways did have a very kind of like classic Doctor Who feel to it. I know a lot of fans online said it reminded them a lot of like the Sylvester McCoy era.
Yeah.
I thought there were some real highlights. I really enjoyed the two-part opener.
Yeah.
Really enjoyed. I did like Nikola Tesla's Night of Terror, Fugitive of the Jadoon. Thought it was a good one.
That was the high point for many people in the series.
Yeah.
Just because nobody was expecting those revelations of Dr. Ruth.
No.
And it's not really been explained.
No.
Which
no.
kind of I like because it means we, you know, it was a pretty packed finale.
Mm. She appeared as well, didn't she in the finale? Appear, yeah.
Really
bit just, of a cameo.
Yeah, just to give some advice, really. Yeah. Does it really matter?
Yeah.
Does it matter who you are? Has it ever mattered?
No, it hasn't.
Yeah, actually, you're right.
Yeah.
Again, I do enjoy Dr. Ruth's performance on screen.
Yeah.
She's an exceptionally good actress.
She's got a lot of force, I think. She's very powerful.
Yeah. I mean, we've only seen brief snippets, but absolutely, just the way it clicks.
She's a very different doctor to Jodie. Jodie is very much more kind of like whimsical and kind of like, you know, a bit more kind of like light-hearted, really.
Yeah.
Whereas Dr. Ruth, Jo Martin, does feel a lot kind of like, almost kind of like more aggressive, and more forceful, a bit Colin Baker.
Yeah.
Kind of like a bit more shouty.
Yes. I know what you mean.
And, you know, I think they work well together. Bouncing off each other. That's one of the bits I liked about Fugitive of the Jadoon. Mm. Again, at the same time, looking back at Series 12, I think there were some low points. There was definitely an idea with Orphan 55.
I don't get that seems to be a common opinion that Orphan 55 was this awful, awful episode. The ratings bear that out. I believe it was Orphan 55, which is episode 3. The AI rather than the ratings.
Yeah.
The ratings have been slipping, unfortunately. Pretty much week on week, it has gone down for most of them. The AI hit 77, which is one of the lowest AIs I believe Doctor Who has had.
Yeah.
For me, you know what? It had somebody with a tail. That's fun. I enjoy that. It had the weird virus where you had to suck your thumb again.
Yeah.
So that was interesting. We had some CGI monsters.
Yeah.
Yes, okay, we had the funny old couple, and Benny is...
Benny!
It's given Rice a bit of a meme, so...
Yeah.
Again, it's good. It's a bit comic book, maybe. Okay, the message...
I think that's the thing, isn't it?
What destroyed it,
I think that's destroyed it for a lot of people. Up to that point, I think I was thinking, it's a bit of a throwaway episode, isn't it? A bit of a run around, you know? It was a bit of tension as they had to get back to the base and stuff. Some of the story logic was a bit why did they all have to leave the base in the first place, and you know,
that's no different to watching a lot of
episodes. No,
I'm fine with that,
but I think it was that ham-fisted way that a lot of people think that message was delivered at the end where the doctor basically turned to the camera and said, "Now listen, folks at home, you need to do something about the pollution," yeah, sort of thing.
Kind of He-Man style message, yes, of the week.
Yeah, yeah. And I have no problem with social messages and Doctor Who, none whatsoever. I think the world needs it, to be perfectly honest. Mm-hmm. I don't mind the link and the message being really clear, because I think it was quite clear in Praxeus, the plastic pollution.
Yeah,
that, you know, this is a message that plastic pollution is bad. Same with Can You Hear Me? Mental health is important. It was a very clear message.
Yeah,
but I just think the way it's just that bit. It is literally those last 3 minutes of that episode, where they're back in the TARDIS and the Doctor just goes, "Yeah, sort it out. You are." And
Do you think he didn't need that? Was the message conveyed clearly enough?
I think the message was conveyed clearly enough. Clearly somebody thought it wasn't.
And do you think that's why that bit was tacked on?
Maybe.
Just to reinforce it. Which is a shame. Because I enjoyed it. I didn't enjoy that bit at the end, I have to admit, yes. For me, I enjoyed Orphan 55 over Nikola Tesla's Night of Terror.
Really?
Because it was a bit of a runaround. I didn't feel like we had a proper resolution out of it. It was a bit OTT in places with the scuttling, the bugs for the...
Scorpions, weren't they?
The Scythra.
Yeah, that's the one.
A bit Keystone Cops as they're going crashing into crates, yeah, and stuff. That's, you know, and the Queen, that was a proper scenery chewing performance.
Angela Mahindra.
It felt very Sarah Jane, because of that as well.
Yeah.
I didn't enjoy it as much as Orphan 55, perhaps. Can You Hear Me? Something again I struggled a bit with, just because of all the extra bits about the companions all shoehorned in about them all having mental health struggles in their time.
I think for me with Can You Hear Me, it started off really well. I liked the whole idea of exploring nightmares and things like that, and it was quite creepy with the, you know, the detaching fingers, and I'm holding my hand up here, everybody at home who's listening. But then those kind of like almost immortal beings, which obviously were hinted at as being like the Guardians.
Yeah, and the Eternals.
Eternals were kind of like dispatched like that. They were gotten rid of at the click of a finger. And that kind of like just gives it a little bit of, I can't believe I'm saying this, an unbelievability, which I can't believe I'm talking about when I'm talking about Doctor Who.
No.
But yeah, so up to that point, I thought, yeah, that was the bit that, of Can You Hear Me, I thought, not quite as good. And I know people, so I saw some fairly harsh criticism of the CGI on that episode as well, with the monstery werewolfy kind of thing.
Yeah, but then if it's the stuff of nightmares, then you go a bit...
Doesn't matter, does it? I've never watched it for the CGI anyway.
No. So. Yes, we have seen better CGI, perhaps. I mean, certainly the flying cyberheads that we saw in Ascension of the Cybermen was a bit of a low point CGI-wise. It did feel like they'd taken a template off the shelf that they already had, because they didn't have the budget to create anything from scratch. Then just basically did a bit of motion tracking and get that flying around the screen.
Yeah,
It was a cheap way of doing things, was what I was getting from it. Overall, though, a better season for me compared to season 11.
Yes.
I certainly enjoyed it more. I particularly enjoyed episode 8, Haunting of Villa Diodati.
Yeah.
By Maxine Alderton, who is a soap writer.
And says a lot, that does, I think.
Yeah. Russell T. Davis, same thing, isn't it? His background was soaps before he started moving into like Queer as Folk and The Grand and things like that. He's good at doing soapy drama. And I'm not saying Doctor Who needs to be a soap or anything like that, but the way soaps, we were talking earlier, weren't we, about soaps being kind of hyped up now, and it's exaggerated life. It's not as it was say the 80s and maybe early 90s, where it was just about the everyday struggles of people's lives. They have exaggerated and ramped things up. And perhaps that is the kind of thing that suits Doctor Who, is this hyper-reality now.
I think, you say Maxine Alderton, her script was solid. I think it helped as well that she knew a fair bit about Shelley and Lord Byron. It's kind of like one of her areas of expertise, I believe.
Ah, right.
But yeah, I think maybe her background in soap writing means that she's got a good grasp of kind of like story elements and writing for characters, you know, characterization. Because I think one of the things we've both agreed on this series is that the companions have been criminally underused.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, at first I had no problem with there being three of them, none whatsoever. But I think this season it's become, I think it's shown that actually there is a bit of an issue with three of them. They don't really know what to do. And they've also, I felt, kind of like brought in loads of extra guest cast as well each episode, which has pushed the companions out even more.
That has made things more difficult. Fugitive of the Jadoon was the low point for them.
Yes.
As they all got sidelined into the, I can't even call it a B plot. It's a C or a D or an E plot because with Captain Jack on the ship. And they all just stood around whilst he shouted, don't let her give the Lone Cyberman what it wants. And they went, what does that mean?
And then in the end, she did anyway.
Yeah.
So that whole C, D or E plot was meaningless.
Well, another season over.
Yeah.
We said we have enjoyed it. We are looking at a festive special.
Still don't know whether it'd be Christmas or New Year, do we?
Revolution of the Daleks. Mm-hmm. Now, if you know, fan lore is to be believed, the Daleks need to make an appearance on every series. So therefore, they'll be squeezing it in before 2021. So it'd be maybe Christmas. Could be worse. We could get shunted to like the 28th of December or something.
Oh, blimey. Could you imagine?
And also rumours that we're going to lose Bradley Walsh and Tosin Cole.
Yeah.
Jumping ship.
Well, I think, obviously, both Tosin and Bradley have just been cast in different things.
Yeah.
And Bradley especially has got a lot of projects on the go. Plus, Bradley is about to turn 60. It's got to be a hard film schedule doing Doctor Who for a 60-year-old. Week in, week out, day in, day out.
It is. But we shall wait and see. That is all to come. We hope you've enjoyed the series as much as we have.
Mm-hmm.
And we hope you've enjoyed listening to our podcast. We shall be back again soon. Until then, it's goodbye from me.
And goodbye from me.